Welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu, and I'm sitting here with three gentlemen from the U.S. Postal Service. The reason why is not only to talk about your Postal Service, things that are happening here in the city, but there's something really special that's always been happening for the longest time, and I've always wanted to talk about it, but we never get a chance to do it until now. And that's the food drive called Stamp Out Hunger. It's a real important thing that feeds our community. And with me this afternoon, the National Association of Letter Carriers Branch number 505, President Albert Onchondo is with us. The food drive coordinator, Martin Alemán's here too, along with letter carrier and communication director of sorts, Eric Miranda. Gentlemen, welcome to El Paso Primetime.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis.
Let's go ahead and start talking about the food drive. There's a history behind this, sir.
Okay. In El Paso, this will be the 23rd year that we do the food drive. El Paso was one of the first cities that had food drives worked and organized by the Letter Carriers Union here, National Association of Letter Carriers, Branch 505. And every year we've been successful in collecting just a lot of food, easily over 100,000 pounds each year. Last year we collected 127,000 pounds. And we're part of a nationwide food drive for the NALC, whereby we collected 72.5 million tons of food.
Oh, my gosh.
Or 72.5 million pounds of food last year nationwide. So we're a part of a very big drive to help our community. It's our community service event. We feel very proud of it, and the benefits of this go to Feeding America food banks, including El Pasoans Fighting Hunger, local food bank here. And they really do benefit from it, and they really feel a great need to get that food out to our community.
Martin Alemán is the food drive coordinator. How hard is it, or how easy is it? It's going to be one or the other to coordinate something like this in order to be able to feed a community the size of El Paso.
Yeah, this is one of the biggest one-day collection of food that we do for our pantries here in El Paso and across America. And, of course, it's a great task. The great thing about it is we have a lot of support from our AFL-CIO helpers that help us, which is our partners, the Teamsters, who help us with our trucks. Of course, we have our carriers who pick up the food. We have the volunteers that help the carriers out in the streets to help them take the foods to the trucks or download the food when we get them down to the stations. But it just takes a lot of coordination and a lot of phone calling, a lot of Facebooking, a lot of emails. It's a huge event.
Once again, this is Eric Miran. I just wanted to mention, if for whatever reason you do not get one of these bags delivered by your letter carrier, please set out, you know, one of those plastic bags or even a paper bag, you know, that you may have already, and just go ahead and fill that bag.
Well, that's an easy way to do that too. Okay, so there you go. I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah, there's a possibility that you're going to run out of bags because this is a huge community. It makes sense. Okay, so that's how you do it. And what's really changed over the years is social networking, actually. If it hadn't been for Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and all of that, it would have been a much harder task in order to get the word out, right?
Exactly. Everything before was pretty much by ear, word of mouth. And, of course, once we got all the backing up, the funds to start sending your little postcards to the residents, and once the residents got a hold of them and they knew this every year that they had, they got their little postcard, it says, oh, it's the food drive. We've got to get the food together. And, of course, but now you got all that social network to accommodate it, too.
Eric Miranda joins us as well. And, Eric, you've been on both sides of the food drive now for a few years. And what's it like from a carrier standpoint? What's it like on the administrative side?
Yes, thank you, Dennis, for the time, for the opportunity to come and talk about this special event that's coming up on Saturday, May 9th. It's as a letter carrier, it's we feel very privileged. We feel very proud and honored, especially getting these bags and these postcards to our customers. Our letter carriers work extremely hard on a daily basis, and this is something that we put extra effort into, you know, getting the word out to the community and being able to get a good response from customers out on our routes. We feel very, very privileged, you know, working with the United States Postal Service because they are our partners in this. You mentioned a little bit about the, you know, history. I just want to bring up Stamp Out Hunger has collected more than 1 billion pounds of food since the annual food drive began back in 1993. In addition to the NALC and the United States Postal Service, sponsors also include the National Rural Letter Carriers Association and Feeding America, which is a national network of food banks.
This is a big, big thing that happens here in the United States, and it happens on the Mother's Day weekend. So, you know, it's one of those things. It's a mother's love to be able to feed your kids. And if you've never had any children, then you have a sense of attachment anyway, because now you're feeding America. And there's something special about the bags that you wanted to mention. These are really – I love how they're specifically marked in both English and Spanish, but there's something else beside it. You want to tell us about it, sir?
Yeah, well, that's part of the connection that we have with our community. We have to pay for these bags, and we get sponsors to pay for them. This year, El Pasoans Fighting Hunger was able to provide the funds for that. And I also want to recognize United Way because with their labor liaison, Lupe Arellano, we've been able to get this coordinated. But back to the bags, we're going to deliver 120,000 of these bags throughout El Paso and Socorro before the food drive. And then we're going to deliver 240,000 of those postcards as reminders. But these brown paper grocery bags are just a reminder for everybody to take all that extra food that you have around the house. Preferably, we would like to see more protein-based food because we want to get good food out into the community.
Mm-hmm.
But just fill those bags up, and it's not necessary for you just to use those bags, but to use any grocery bags that you have around the house, and your letter carriers will pick them up. So it's just something that's special. We find that using the grocery bags helps to increase the collections. But on the other hand, it does cost quite a bit of money to purchase 120,000 food bags. You can imagine, even if they're a few cents a piece, you do the multiplication and you'll see it's a lot of money.
Absolutely. And then there's the other thing that I wanted to bring up especially, too, because you know, having been on the other side of helping organize food drives like this, the expiration date on these things have to be adhered to because of where they're going to. So no expired foods, please. This is something really special. You know, I know that there's a federal limitation on the expiration date. So, you know, no expired foods, especially the ones that say like 1998.
Right. Right. Right.
That's not cool at all.
Right. And we'll give kudos to the El Pasoans Fighting Hunger Food Bank in that they really do go through each can of food through their volunteers. They make sure it's clean. They have a lot of pantries that they work with throughout El Paso. So they're very, very careful with the food. But Martin has a list of the foods that they would really recommend that we put out into next to our mailboxes so that the carriers can pick them up. And if it's okay with you, Martin can read the list for us.
We need the list. So, Martin,
okay.
If you would, please.
Yes, sir. Here are a few non-perishable items requested by our food pantries in the El Paso area, of course, throughout the U.S. also. Cereal, pastas, rice, canned fruits and vegetables, canned meals such as soups, chili, pasta, 100% juice products, peanut butter, pasta sauce, spaghetti sauce, macaroni and cheese, canned protein, tuna, chicken, turkey, beans, canned or dry. And, of course, these are just some of the items that our food pantries really request, but we don't mind if you put any extra things in there.
Right.
Always helps.
But these are the staples that people really do need in order to sustain a healthy life. And that's basically why this food drive was designed some years back, in order to make sure that everyone eats. The sad part is that, and in this community alone, when you look at senior citizens, realize that one out of six senior citizens may not have enough to eat tonight. That was a glaring fact that was I got hit with about 3-4 months ago. I couldn't believe it until I started looking around and finding out, man, is that true?
Very true.
It really is. I think a lot of senior citizens find themselves coping with having to pay for their everyday costs of living, including their medical and prescription costs, and they find that food a lot of times takes a back seat to having to take care of those regular bills. And we've also found that a lot of young children, and in El Paso also, especially El Paso, there is a great need in our community. And these children, sometimes if they don't participate in the nutrition programs at school, then they find themselves wanting for, you know, 2 or 3 good square meals at home. Mm-hmm. So this is part of helping that group of folks. And it's just, like I say, it's something that letter carriers, we feel that's what describes a union organized labor well. It's not that we just try to take care of our own rights and benefits and so on, but it's giving back to the community as a way of showing the gratitude that we have for being able to be letter carriers.
Having a parent who was a letter carrier for some 38 years, and my uncles who also served well in the service, if you will, I understand that solidarity not only means within the union, but it means within the community. If you don't give back to the community, then what good is it all the way around? And so I get it. You know, I understand it. The pipe fitters union, the electricians, letter carriers, everyone who belongs to a union of sorts, everyone knows you give back to the community, and this is a great way for NALC to do this.
Yeah, we're happy to report that a lot of the local unions in El Paso get volunteers to participate in our food drive by helping to unload the postal vehicles, and we get them all that food onto the dock, and then we have to put it into containers that are provided by the Postal Service, mm-hmm. and those go into the big trailers hauled by YRC trucking firms and the Teamster drivers. All of this done at no cost. It's just a bunch of folks getting together in the community. There again, United Way, they organize us by getting more volunteers. And we want to add that if there are any teenagers who need to get that community service in, we'll sign you up and we'll log in your hours, and you can take that back to your high schools or to any religious organization or whatever community organization they participate in, so that they can show that they are also working with the community. So it's really a great joint effort. And the more people that are involved, the more we make it possible to give more food. And that really has to include radio stations such as yourself and the other media folks who are out there to support us, give us the opportunity just to talk about what we're doing.
Well, it's a vital part of the community to do this food drive. But being a letter carrier, serving the public like you do in every kind of adverse condition, and making sure that we all get the mail together, you know, people don't ever thank you. So on behalf of the city and on behalf of the country, thank you so much, guys, for everything you do in order to make sure that the mail gets from point A to point B.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for feeding El Paso.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Albert Onchondo. He's the NALC Branch 505 president. Eric Miranda is a letter carrier, also director of communication for the, I guess you could call it the Boeing branch of the Postal Service. Martin Aleman is the food drive coordinator. This is all happening Saturday. Make sure you have a bag full of non-perishable items. And if you're looking for that list, it'll be up on our website, ktep.org. wonderful, guys. Mi casa, su casa, anytime. Come on back. Yes. Mi casa, su casa, guys. Anytime that you have something coming up, please come on back.
Thank you very much, Dennis.
Thank you, sir.
And just this morning, we wound up at our home with the National Association of Letter Carriers Stamp Out Hunger Food Bank. And that's getting ready to be filled sometime soon so that we have it ready for next Saturday's food drive. If you'd like a bag, we actually have a limited number here at the radio station. Come on by the Cott Memorial Building in room 206. Be happy to give you one. El Paso Primetime continues in just a moment. And on the line with us this afternoon is Jim Grimsley, an author of 5 books, 4 of which are really interesting reads, Winter Birds, My Drowning, Dream Boy, Comfort and Joy. But his latest endeavor is one called How I Shed My Skin, Unlearning the Racist Lessons of a Southern Childhood. Welcome to El Paso Primetime, Jim.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Jim, I have to first off tell you that this book, the way you've written it, the way you've crafted it, reminds me so much of William Saroyan's The Human Comedy.
Oh, well, thank you. That's high praise.
It is. It's such a wonderful read, but there is something that really kind of piques my interest, and that's the coming of not just childhood, but it's also getting into the middle school and the high school sort of a thing, and the realization that things aren't as different as people paint them to be, although there are the markers that people assume they want to teach us how to recognize.
Right. This was that, I think, echoes what I was trying to talk about when I told the story of the sixth grade class when the three black girls first entered the class. These were the first black people that I'd ever had any social interaction with. And from the very first day, I understood that these girls were not what I had been led to believe that they were. They were children just like me. They felt just like me. They cared about many of the same things I did. They were not subservient. They were not inferior. They were just people. And they became friends over the course of that first year. So this was a lesson to me that a lot of the ideas I had in my head about what was different about black people and white people were just simply wrong, and I had to get rid of them.
There's a portion in the trade-off of insults that opened the book realistically, yeah, that really points all of us in the direction of, listen.
Yeah, really.
You know, and don't throw stones if you don't want them thrown back at you.
Yeah, one of the black girls sat behind me, and for some reason I decided I was going to put her in my place. We were all a little uncomfortable that day because this was the first time we'd had black kids in the class with us. So I turned around and I called her a name, and I didn't think she was going to talk back. I don't know even why I thought that, but she immediately looked at me and said, well, you're a white cracker, so-and-so. And she spit the name back at me and embarrassed me in front of the whole class and taught me a very important lesson, that she wasn't going to take any stuff off me, that she was just as good as me, she knew it, and she wasn't going to be dealt with in any other way.
Now, your family lived in the village proper, but your best friend, Marianne, lived in a farm away from the town, right?
Right. She was 2 or 3 miles outside town.
Does that change things in rural areas in terms of, let's say, thought process?
There was the village that I lived in had 400 people in it, so there really wasn't a lot of – we made a lot mentally of that difference, but – there wasn't much difference between the country and the village, frankly. You know, her father was a farmer, but this was during an era in which a lot of people were getting out of farming because they couldn't make a living at it anymore. So the village was in flux. People were moving in and out of town. But again, this was a difference that we made a lot of, but there wasn't a dime's worth of difference between us, frankly.
There's a short chapter that you explain exactly what the N-word meant,
yeah,
back in the day.
Right.
And how it doesn't apply to anything anymore other than a word that all of a sudden everybody gave some kind of a definition to. It's
right.
in a very intriguing way to approach such a volatile topic.
Well, I wanted to dispel this myth that we didn't actually use that word very much. I mean, when you talk to white people about that era, white Southerners, one of the things I hear from them all the time is, oh, my mother wouldn't let me say that word, as if that meant that they were being taught tolerance or being taught equal rights or respect, when really they were being taught polite language. You know, what I've often said to those folks is, well, your mother taught you not to use a lot of words, but you probably went on and used them anyway, right? The common thing to say is we didn't use that word very much, but when I started actually examining the ways that I had heard it used when I was a child, as you can see from that passage in the book, it's a substantial list, and the list, when you read it, leaves you with a bad feeling, a bad taste in your mouth, because you feel as if you've demeaned yourself by saying those things about other people. One of the ways that we taught racism to one another in that era, and probably still today, especially where that word is still used regularly, is through the N-word and its associations, the way that it could be used not only to demean black people, but to demean anything that they did, to make them, to dehumanize them in just about every aspect of their lives.
Jim Grimsley is our guest this afternoon on El Paso Primetime, and we're talking about his new work called How I Shed My Skin, Unlearning the Racist Lessons of a Southern Childhood. Just recently, just this past week or so, the California legislature and Governor Jerry Brown have signed into law forbidding the government to sell any semblance, anything at all that contains the Confederate flag. Does that surprise you now?
No. I don't know exactly what. I haven't heard about that legislation, so that comes as a little bit of a surprise. But, you know, I don't understand. It's become a symbol of intolerance. It's the symbol of a nation that tried to pull itself out of the United States for reasons that are highly questionable. So I don't disagree with it. I mean, I think it's... I live in a place where that symbol is revered as a symbol of a way of life that people cling to. But when you really examine what that flag stands for and what that way of life included, I don't think there's anything there that I can respect as a human being.
Understood. And now, and I'm sure because you've been doing all of these radio interviews all morning and all afternoon long, the question has come up about Baltimore and Ferguson and all of that. What is your take on all of that outcry, all of the outreach that's happening? Pro and con, trying to quell all of those violent moves and whatnot. Is that just, is this sensationalism on the part of people just wanting to riot because they can? Or is there truly some kind of civil rights motion that's going on behind all of that?
I think you have to understand that these events are tapping into a very real fear on the part of black people. And the fear grows worse every time one of these killings occurs. You know, what you want to call them murders.
Mm-hmm.
When a black man can be stopped for not having a tail light, or for jaywalking, or for really just making eye contact with a white cop, as just happened in Baltimore. When a black person can be singled out by the police for matters that are slight as those and yet somehow end up dead, then that's going to strike fear into people. And fear is going to be responded to. People, when they're afraid, aren't going to be rational. You can't expect that.
Right.
I think it's clear that these demonstrations against the actions of the police in all these places have generally begun in peaceful ways and have, for the most part, been peaceful. But once the violence starts, it can't be controlled by anybody, and it becomes the thing that we focus on, much to the detriment of the issue. When the people get angry and start to move, there are certain opportunists are going to become involved. Genuine anger is going to be expressed. It's a complicated world, and a mass movement of people is not going to be a pretty or organized or unified thing unless it's got a very strong leader. And these protests, these marches that we've seen in all these cities have been led by people who are very well-meaning, but they haven't been able to control the entire scene yet. And they may not want to, you know.
Right.
You have to honor the people's anger when they start to express it, frankly.
In your book, How I Shed My Skin, you have a chapter called Protests.
Right, right. There were two walkouts at our high school in two successive years. We generally did not have problems that became group problems between the black and the white students in high school. But the black students were angry at the administration for a couple of things that happened. In one year, a white teacher said something particularly insensitive about black students, and the black students walked out of class because of that. And they had good reason to, and the teacher was ultimately dismissed. And in the next year, a black teacher was fired in the middle of the year, and he was a very important member of the faculty, particularly in terms of the way he had supported the black students. And so, once again, they walked out that term. And what's curious is that even today, the black folks in Jones County refer to those as walkouts, and the white people refer to them as riots. So you can see how perspective changes the same event when human eyes are looking at it, but the minds behind the eyes are making different interpretations of the facts.
We're on the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act and the 51st anniversary of the Civil Rights Act, 61st anniversary of Brown versus the Board of Education. So with all of that, do you think we've even made one inch of progress?
I think we've made huge progress. The thing is, it's not uniform progress. I mean, human beings don't all move in one direction. The more things change, the more they stay the same. That's a very good adage to keep in mind when you're talking about an issue as big as this. You cannot deny the fact that the dismantling of the laws that permitted legal oppression of black people throughout the South and in some places outside the South, wiping out those laws is a huge step. Sending black kids and white kids together to public school is a huge step, especially where that's actually gone on working and the integration has held itself in place. It's sad to say that resegregation has occurred in so many places, but if you focus only on the negative, you're going to think that no progress has been made, and I just don't think that's true. I think we've made huge progress. The problem is that it's a big country. Mm-hmm. Millions upon millions of people, and millions of people have not made progress, and there are many times when that gets rubbed in our face.
It makes a whole lot of sense. Jim Grimsley, thank you so much for being a part of El Paso Primetime. I wish you well. Lots of luck with this book and future endeavors as well.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Jim Grimsley's book, How I Shed My Skin, Unlearning the Racist Lessons of a Southern Childhood, is available at bookstores nationwide as well as online. Next Saturday, it's the National Association of Letter Carriers 23rd Step Out Hunger Food Drive, and all you have to do is just leave a bag of non-perishable items near your mailbox. The mail carrier will do the rest. Thanks to Deidre Westenhauser for doing the editing for today's show. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to this edition of El Paso Primetime.